This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. If you've been a kid or raised a kid in, the last four decades, you've no doubt heard Barry Lewis Polisar. He's with me in the studio. He's been writing and performing children's songs like Don't Put Your Finger Up Your Nose for four decades.
Don't put your finger up your nose, 'cause your nose knows it's not the place it goes. You can sniffle, you can sneeze, but I'm asking you, please, don't put your finger up your nose. And don't put your finger in your eye. It's not a thing I think you ought to try. You can blink it, you can wink it, but I don't think it would be good to put your finger in your eye.
In 2007, 30 years after he wrote it, his song All I Want Is You was featured in the opening credits of the film Juno, which raised Polisar's profile.
If I was a flower growing wild and free, all I wanted you to be my sweet honey bee. If I was a tree growing tall and green, all I wanted you to shade me and be my leaves. All I want is you, will you be my bride? Take me by the hand, stand by my side. All I want is you, will you stay with me? Hold me in your arms and sway me like the sea. If you were a river in the mountains tall, the rumble of your water would be my call. If you were the winter, I know I'd be the snow. As long as you were with me, let the cold winds blow. All I want is you.
Polisar has also written dozens of children's books, and now he's written a book for adults, a thoughtful reflection on the first book of the Bible, Genesis. Barry Lewis Polisar is here with me. Welcome back to the show.
Pleasure to be back. Thanks.
You called this book Retelling Genesis. What moved you to write about Genesis?
The backstory is when my kids were younger, going to bar and bat mitzvah lessons, they were required to go to synagogue, and I told them that I would never drop them off at the door and leave, that if they were going, I would go with them. And I began reading the Bible, the Torah, for the first time as an adult, and I just had tons of questions. I would read things. I would think, man, did I understand that right? And I would go up to the rabbi after the service, and I would ask him questions. And the next thing I knew, I found myself in a Torah class on a Friday morning with all the other retirees, because who else can take up a class like that on a Friday morning? And as we were reading these stories, I kept thinking about the other characters, the characters that did not have a voice in Genesis. I mean, you sort of hear the story really from Adam, the Adam and Eve story, for instance, from Adam's point of view. You hear Noah's story, but Noah had a wife, and she's mentioned but not even named in the story. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Wouldn't it be kind of fun to sort of take some of these stories and look at them from the secondary character's point of view? So it's not inventing new stories. A lot of Midrash, the tradition of writing new stories around biblical stories, invents things. I didn't want to do that. I only wanted to take the exact story of what happens in as described in the Bible and the Torah and sort of interpret it from another character's point of view. It's not really a retelling in the sense of a new story, but it's a retelling from another point of view, which, of course, is very Talmudic. You know, on the other hand, there's another side to the story. Oh, well, there's another side to the story.
That's storyteller, poet, and songwriter Barry Lewis Polisar here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his new book, Retelling Genesis. I'm especially fascinated by the women we hear from in Retelling Genesis who were just sort of lurking in the background. Read us part of the one about Eve's side.
Eve's side. I am the woman in the story and often blamed for this apple thing, but believe me, this was no ordinary fruit. This was the fruit from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. God never told me not to eat from it, at least not directly. He told Adam. I wasn't even around yet when that rule was handed down. I was, after all, the last to be created, after the swarms of living creatures and the fowl that fly above the earth, after the great sea monsters and the winged beast of every kind, after the cattle, the creeping things, and the wild beasts, after the shrubs and grasses, after Adam. God created all of these and pronounced them good. He saw that it was paradise and that it was holy, and then he rested. It was then that God told Adam not to eat from that tree. And only then did he cause Adam to slumber, and I was created. Just touching the fruit of that tree would kill me, I told the serpent. When that didn't happen, it was easy to assume that Adam had made the whole story up. That's the thing about adding extra rules and prohibitions. You build your fence too high, and you run the risk that it will fall from its own weight.
Where do you come off speaking for Eve or for any of these characters?
Well, you know, that is the question that I ask myself quite a bit, especially considering my background. In my music for kids and my songwriting and poetry for kids, it's often giving voice to kids, and especially kids that don't have a voice. In my early years, I think people sort of thought of me as the bad boy of children's music because I sang about nagging parents and mean teachers and
sticking your finger up your nose.
And things that generally didn't get written about, let alone said in children's songs. But I thought it was important to sort of provide a voice for kids that didn't have one. And so this book sort of is in that same tradition, not only the tradition of looking at things from a different point of view, which is very Talmudic, but also the tradition of just searching for truth and answers in letting lots of people speak.
You stress that unlike all the other books on your website, or almost all the other books, which are for children, this is not for children. It gets quite racy.
Yeah, this is definitely, and it says on the website, this is an adult book. This is not it gets racy only because the original stories in the Bible are racy, which is, I think, part of the fascination for me that, you know, you hear so much in the general noise that's out there in the world about, you know, we need to get back to these biblical basics, but the stories are really pretty racy. They are pretty edgy. And so I don't think I cross any lines there, but I mean I address those same stories because if I'm telling the stories or retelling the stories, there has to be some connection to the originals.
So what part of the Bible do you intend to retell next?
Oh, no, I think I'm done. This was just, you know, I've actually sat on this book for about 12, 13 years. I kept revising it, rewriting it, questioning who am I to even put this thing out. But I had written it, and I liked it, and I kept coming back to it, and I still liked it. I think it has a real interesting place in the sense of looking at life from other points of view, from other perspectives. And so I finally just decided, well, I'm just going to put it out there and see what happens. I don't do this kind of work normally. Mostly I'm in schools and libraries, working with kids, singing, writing.
How did you choose which stories to tell, to retell?
To retell, yeah. Well, I certainly took my favorites, and a lot of the genesis, if I can use that word, was in this Torah class that I took at our synagogue, where we talked about, as we read these stories, you know, we read the story of Abraham sacrificing Isaac, the obvious or attempted sacrifice of Isaac. And then the obvious question is, well, where does that leave Isaac? What is Isaac's point of view on this? There's nothing in the Bible that talks about that. It just says, you know, an angel came down, or hand of God came down and sort of stopped him at the last minute and offered a ram instead. And then that's it. There's no more about that.
And is Isaac just fine with that?
Yeah, well, so the obvious question comes up in class. Well, what about Isaac? And there's actually a lot of sort of rabbinic discussion about some of these characters. I mean, he doesn't say much at all throughout the Bible, and there's some discussion that maybe he really was traumatized by this and lost his voice. I mean, yes, there are other stories that would be equally good. I just sort of wanted to limit myself to those 13 that I picked. I mean, because that's a whole book in and of itself.
These beautiful, vivid illustrations that were done by your wife, Ronnie Lynn Palisar, make me wonder, did she have a role in choosing?
No, she didn't. No, I mean, I pretty much gave her the manuscript afterwards. Certainly, she reads everything I write, my children's books, my children's poems. I mean, she's a great critic because she's totally honest with me in terms of what's good and what she doesn't think works. But no, you know, basically, I had the story. She read it. I mean, obviously, she was involved in the editing process over that period of 12 years. And by the way, this is actually not my first sort of foray into writing for adults, because I also did a Passover Haggadah called Telling the Story, and a Passover Haggadah Explained, which goes through the Passover traditions and not only goes through each step that you would normally do in a Passover Seder, but also explains and gives a sort of spiritual background for each step. So my daughter did the artwork for that book, and then my wife did the artwork for this book.
Your website is terrific. You've got, as I understand it, all your children's books there to download for free, to read for free. And you've done that now with Retelling Genesis. Also, why make your books free on your website?
Well, I've been very fortunate in having a wonderful and fun and supportive career for 40 years. I mean, I've made my living. This is the only thing I've done for 40 years is write songs and work in the schools and libraries and do concerts and write poems. And 40 years ago, I don't think I would have ever imagined that I could sustain myself doing this.
It's not obvious that one can.
Yes, it's not the typical job. I mean, as I said often, it beats a real job. But it's been successful. And many of my schools that I visit are Title I schools, low-income schools, where I'm being brought in with funding from who knows where to talk to the kids about being a writer, to share my songs, to share my books. But many of the kids don't come from families that support reading, that support buying books. And so if I'm doing my job right, I'm exciting all these kids about reading and reading my books and my poems and hearing my songs. So I felt very strongly that I just wanted to put that stuff out there, because every kid has access to a computer, whether it's in the library, whether it's in the classroom, or at home. And so this makes everything that I've written available for free, digital forms of my books, and MP3s of my songs, and I even have recorded all of my stories and poems and have posted them as oral readings, so kids can actually read my books, read my song lyrics, read my poems, and hear me read them alongside of them as a learning tool. I do sometimes worry that it's putting myself out of business, but again, I'm 60 years old now. I'm not that young, hungry 20-year-old songwriter, so I feel it balances out.
But I'm sure other authors and performers are interested in your experience here, whether you are cannibalizing your sales. What do you tell them?
You know, I don't really know, truthfully. I mean, I think probably in some level people will hear my stuff, read the digital forums and say, I really like that book. I want to get that book. I want to buy that book or the song. So it may indeed play both ways. I think I don't really think like that. After Juno came out, I've had my songs used in countless commercials all across the country. In fact, all across the world, in Europe, in Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, Canada. And so it kind of gave me a little bit of a cushion to say, you know, okay, so let me offer some things for free. Let me play that forward, give that back, and let kids have access all around the world. People are finding out about me through a commercial, through a 30-second spot in England or Scotland, and they come to my website and then they discover all the other work. So for me, it's just kind of one continuous circle. Very, very first time I was interviewed 40 years ago, a newspaper person asked me, what is your goal in life? What do you want to happen with your music, to your career? And I said, truthfully, I think I want what any writer would want, which would be to find an audience, to have my work enjoyed and appreciated.
I love it. Thanks. Thanks for talking to us about it.
Thank you. My pleasure. Don't put your finger up your nose.
Songwriter, storyteller, poet, and author Barry Lewis Polisar. His latest book is Retelling Genesis, illustrated by his wife, Ronnie Lynn Polisar. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, including a link to Polisar's website. More of this interview there, too.
Oh, don't put your finger up your nose, because your nose knows it's not the place it goes. You can sniff or you can sneeze, but I'm asking you, please, don't put your finger up your nose.
And don't put your finger in your ear, because then your ear will find it hard to hear. You can...
You forgot the word.
I forgot the word.
No!